we basically have seen that there is no special commandment from the Torah. It's on a deraisa level from the Torah to honor in-laws more than there would be, as we saw brought that in the Shach, in the name of the Bach, more than there would be to honor any person that's older, or a choshev zaken, somebody that's important, a great person. But as far as there being a specific, particular law regarding this, we don't have. And we went through many of the sources in that area, and then we dealt with the question of therefore what happens when we have a conflict, when the when you have the wife's father, meaning the father-in-law, says he wants one thing and it conflicts with what the husband wants. So we learn that it's not, the point here is not that who wins, that there's a higher degree of honoring one's husband than there is to honor one's father. That certainly is not true. The Torah clearly states that you have to honor your parents. So it can't be that if there's a clash between honoring your parents and honoring a spouse, that the law of honoring a spouse wins. That can't be. The law of honoring a spouse is not clearly spelled out in the Torah. Therefore, we learn that it's not that one is more powerful than the other, but we learn that in a case where there's a clash, the Torah simply does not require the woman to honor her father or her mother where there's a clash, because of the nature of the relationship that she has with her husband. Then when she leaves her home, she is, as we saw in Shulchan Aruch, she is mishubedas labayla. That means that she has the responsibilities towards her husband and towards her family. And that doesn't mean that it's stronger than the law of honoring one's parent. It means, as we learned last week, that in the case where there's a clash, there is no law to honor the parent under those circumstances. What we're going to talk about tonight, and hopefully we'll be able to finish, we're going to discuss the subject that's the natural conclusion of this, which is meddling and interfering parents, in-laws, parents who are getting involved, pushing themselves into the lives of their children. How does halacha view this? How do we deal with this according to halacha? The most extreme case of this would obviously be, and this is spoken about specifically in halacha, which we're going to learn inside in a moment. We're going to see clearly from this tshuva of the Ma'arik how to deal with it. The most extreme situation would be a case where the man's father he simply can't stand his daughter-in-law, and he says and he commands his son to divorce her. He says, I don't want you living with this woman. I will not have this woman in our family. And I therefore insist that you divorce her. Now, there's a law in Shulchan Aruch. There's a law in Yerideya that the Rama brings down in the halachas of honoring parents. And it's based upon a ruling that we're going to see that you have in front of you. The Rama says, we're in Simon Reish Mem. The very last Rama in Simon Reish Mem. That's on page Nun Ches in the Sefer in Yerideya. The last Rama in the whole Simon Reish Mem says, Agav v'chein im ha'av moicha beben lisa ezu isha shiach b'etz ba ha'ben ein tzarech l'shmoel ha'av. That means that if the father protests his son marrying who the woman that the son wants to marry, right? His father protests. He does not want that wedding to take place. He does not want that girl. So the Rama writes, "Ein tzarech lishmo el ha'av." He is not obligated to listen to the father. And you'll see in parentheses that this is the source of this is the Maharik Sharash Kuf Samach Zain in the way that it's numbered the Maharik that the Rama had. Let's learn this inside. That's the photostat that you have. It'll take around 5 minutes, 10 minutes to learn it. But there's a very, very important tshuva from Ma'arik, which in this area is a groundbreaking tshuva. It's a groundbreaking ruling in halacha, which you see was accepted in the Shulchan Aruch by the Rama as being the absolute final word on the subject. But where did the Ma'arik get to this? In other words, the source of this law. That if you have the source of this law that states that if the father has no control over who the child, or the parents have no control over who you marry, that that's completely up to you. The root and source of that is in the Maharik, and obviously only after we learn this Maharik can we then deal with the question of parents who are interfering, in-laws who are interfering in a marriage, and how to deal with it, as we will see. So look inside. Let's do it quickly. Vasher nistapakta. You see where there's an asterisk? Right? It says, Vasher nistapakta im yesh koch biyad ha'av limchos biyad beno lisa isha she yachpats b'ha ben. He's responding to the question of the rabbi who sent him the question. You were wondering what is the halacha? Can a father prevent his son or his daughter from marrying the person that who he or she has chosen? Can a father do that? So the Marik writes, Lanias Daiti, in my humble opinion, Nirish imhi isha ha-hogenis lo, that if she is a proper Jewish woman, now what does that mean? I mean, she's a girl that's observant of Torah mitzvahs and so on. She'ein koch b'yad ha'av, limchos b'yad ha'ben. Then the father has no right, has no power to protest what the son is doing. The Marie goes on to give three reasons for this. And they're very important because these are guidelines that are used throughout the laws of honoring parents when there's conflict between parents and children and daughter-in-law, son-in-law. These are the guiding principles. These are the three reasons he gives for this ruling, that the father cannot dictate who you will marry. You do not have to listen to your parents when they tell you not to marry this person or to marry that person. So he says first, he says chada, the first reason. Ta'afilu l'inyin mamon. That even in the area of mamon, oirelei, which means money, monetary things, it should be oirelei, as it's corrected in the bottom. Oirelei rabbanu l'rab yirmiya kaman d'amar mishel ha'av. That means there's a dispute in the Gemara when a parent is unable to take care of himself or herself and the child has to take over. Whose bank account does that come from? Does that come from the parents or does that come from the children? So even according, so he said that I relay Rabban Rabbi Yirmiyah command to Amar Mishel Ha'av, v'chein poskim kol poskim halachas, that the consensus of the poskim, of the consensus in halach is that money is drawn from the parents' account. From the parents' account, let's say there's a parent who unfortunately is no longer able to take care of himself, doesn't know what's going on. That money, and it's going to require, this happens unfortunately all the time, it's going to require a fortune of money to take care with nurses or with a nursing home or medication and so on, and other necessities of life. So whose money does that come from? Does it come from the child? Does it come from the parents? So the conclusion of the poskim is it comes Mishel Ha'av, from the parent. And that's how they paskin. Asher isi kol shekein hachas, shehu dava shayach b'tzare de gufa laniach isha shechofetz ba, v'yitztarech lakachas isha acheres, asher lo tiyasher b'enav kol kach. He says, so the Marik says that certainly, if the ruling is that even in a monetary thing, even when it comes to money, the son does not have to go to his purse, does not have to dip into his own pocket, does not have to use his own personal account to take care of his parents, but it comes from the parents' account. So the Marik says that first of all, on the most basic level, certainly this person will suffer a terrible loss. On the most simple level, will suffer terrible financial difficulties having to go through this arrangement. And why does the son have to suffer his own losses because of something that the father, not the son, but something that the father wants? Or in this situation, even if it's not that the father is telling the son to get a divorce, but in this case, where the father is telling the son, I don't want you to marry that person. It seems that Marika says that he has no jurisdiction over that area. That even when that the father's jurisdiction is relating to things that have to do with him, with his own personal welfare. He goes on, he says, V'od, and secondly, the curve had, this is an interesting thing he says here now. And secondly, he says, V'od, the curve had dorva be'enai. It seems very clear, he says, it seems something which is obvious to me, or almost obvious to me. Leos kemitzvah lavra al divrei Torah. Now, you know, you know that a parent is not allowed to command the child to violate the Torah. A parent can't tell a child to go on Shabbos in the car. A parent cannot tell a child to eat something that's not kosher. Right? Because the parent is also obligated to listen to Hashem. So a parent can't tell you to go against, to violate the Torah. So the Marik says a very interesting thing, if you take into account how long ago this was written. So the Marik says that it seems to me that for a parent to say that I will not let you marry the person that you want to marry, it's on some level, the Marik says, it's like commanding the child to violate the Torah. Why? Shari Omer Rabbi Seinozal also Adam Shikadish is a Isha Ad Shirena, because the Gemara says that you're forbidden to betroth a woman. You're not allowed to marry a woman until you have seen her. That means that she has to be someone that you have chosen, that you want to marry, that's pleasing to you, in whatever way you consider to be pleasing. But it has to be somebody that you agree to marry, that you want to marry. And the reason for that is The reason that is obvious is because the Torah is seeking to promote good feelings and love and so on, and therefore it's necessary that they meet each other. So the Marik writes, okay, now he says it's permitted to marry someone without seeing. It's allowed. It's not preferable. It's preferable to see the person first, but it's permitted because they were afraid. Apparently, there was a shortage of there's a shortage of girls, so we're afraid that she'll go and she'll marry somebody else. So, what we see from this ruling is that you should not marry somebody until you've met the person. Is that the Torah wants that a person should marry the one that he's chosen, someone that he cares for, someone that he wants to marry, that he's attracted to, that he wants to marry, the timtzeh chen beinav, who finds favor in his eyes. And therefore, we find many halachas, many laws, many decrees that were passed in order to see to it, that finds a place in halacha that will increase and intensify the affection and the fondness between a husband and a wife. And we already have a ruling from the Rabbeinu Asher, from the Rosh. We saw this is in the Shulchan Aruch as well, that if a father commands his son, I will not allow you to speak to that other Jew, or I will not allow you to forgive that other Jew for what he's done to you, if the son wants to make up with that other person, he does not have to listen to his father. Why? Because, in effect, what that father is saying is, I want to perpetuate the hatred that you have for that person. I'm telling you, I will not allow you to make up with that person. I will not allow you to have anything to do with that person, not to speak to him. So the Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher, rules that the father has no jurisdiction over that. Why? Because what's happening is, in effect, what's happening is, he is commanding the son to continue hating and being involved in a dispute with another Jew. That is the equivalent of commanding your child to go against the Torah. So the Marik says, similarly over here, same thing. Hachanami, lo shna lefi haniulin yas daiti mach sheyesh v'davin didnu davera, kedepir shleil. The Marik says that for a father to tell a son who to marry, for a mother to say, you cannot marry this person that you want to marry, and you have to marry the person of my choice, it involves some level of a violation of the law of the Torah that has commanded us to make an effort to see to it that we marry someone who is pleasing to us, who we want to marry. And the reason is obvious, that otherwise you could very easily come to despise that person, to hate the person that was chosen for you without your consent. Listen, traditionally the parents did find the shidduch, but the child would have to consent. But we're talking about a case where the child does not consent, or the child wants to marry someone, the father says, you can't marry, and has no legitimate reason. I don't like her, I don't like the family. I don't like the family, right? I have this a lot of time with students of mine, that the kids are perfectly suited for each other, and they'd be a wonderful couple, but his parents say that her parents are peasants or something, they don't live up to their expectations of what's considered to be cultured and refined and whatever it might be, and that's something which the Marik says we do not have to listen to, because the father is in effect telling the kid to violate the Torah, to marry someone he doesn't want to marry, or not to marry the person who he does want to marry. The father cannot do that. A parent cannot do that. You don't have to listen to that. Va'od. This is connected to the first reason. The only disagreement in the Gemara of who pays for the parents' care, is it from the parents' account or is it from the children's account, that disagreement is only el-bedavid ha-shayach ha'av, only something which has to do with the life of the father. That should say kigon, such as panosas ha'av, should sarach guf ha'av v'kiyumo. In other words, to take care of the physical needs of the father, that is something, there's a disagreement. To take care of the physical needs of the father, there's a disagreement. Is that part of honoring your father? Is that included in the midst of honoring your father? Do you have to pay for that? Or can you honor your father and take care of all the medical arrangements, but from using your father's money? There's a disagreement, but that has to do, obviously, with the father's personal physical well-being. But he says, "But kihacha pshita, the ain tchayach laav limches beben loymishum kovid loymishum mayra, the loshayach kovid kibud ela kegoyin ma'achilu mashkei ma'bishum anilo." The Marik says we have to understand the definition of honoring a parent. Honoring a parent The Ma'arik says that the law of honoring a parent or of revering a parent, that has to do with the personal needs such as the Gemara gives. Bringing food to him, bringing him something to drink, dressing him if necessary, putting on his shoes, or in terms of revering or fearing a father, you know, I have to sit in his seat. Below so ser as devar, I'm in the last paragraph, the middle of the last paragraph on the first page. You're not allowed to contradict your father and so on. V'chein kayotze b'zeh, the shayach lav. All of these things affect your father in a very direct, personal way. Bringing him his food, not contradicting him and so on. There the father, the parent, is affected in a direct, personal way. Aval b'milse de la shayach hav b'gavar. But in something which is not really the father's business. It doesn't affect him. Of course, he'll say, you know, you have parents that will say it affects me if my kid scratches his head the wrong way. You know, they're overbearing parents. But the halacha doesn't deem that to be a personal need of the father. So if the father says, I don't want you marrying Sarah Rachel, I don't want you marrying that girl, I don't like her. That's not the same thing as a father saying, don't contradict me, bring me my food, don't sit in my seat. Those are things that are considered to be of personal that affect the father directly and personally. Even though the father will say, it hurts me if you marry that girl. Of course they'll say, what do you think he's going to say? He'll say, I'm going to get a heart attack. This is all something which is, according to halacha, is not considered to be that which directly impacts upon the parent. Even though the parent will say it does, but halacha does not deem that as something which is included in this category of directly, of being part of the parent's personal needs. Honoring a parent and revering has to do with the parent's personal needs. This is the personal need of the child, not of the parent. The parent doesn't like that choice. The parent's not happy with that choice. Okay, but that's not a reason for the child to change his mind. Even according to the opinion that says that the child has to pay for the parents' expenses to medical and so on, that's talking about when the father has a personal physical benefit from the care that needs to be taken for him. However, the Tosfos Shas rules that in a case, for instance, where the son has a conflict, on the one hand, he has the opportunity right now to honor his father somehow, bringing him his supper, taking care of him at this moment, or v'chazaros avedasa, or the son has lost something. The son has lost something of value to him, and he needs to find it, and he's in the process of looking for it or finding it, so. Kevin Shaina of Nene. Bigufa Veda ain't have been chayv lahafsid avidosa bishvilaviv. The halach is that I don't have to lose, as a child, as a son, I don't have to lose my money because my father wants me to bring him supper right now. I don't have to lose. I don't have to suffer a loss because of that, because of the expectation of that my father has that I be mechabed him at this moment. Kol shekain. So the Marik says certainly. How much more so? L'madam mishalav. V'od kol shekain. Heichas she'ena ben meniach melasas kibud aviv hamutalav. This son says, listen, Dad, I'm going to honor you. I'll honor you anyway. I'll honor you according to the laws of the Torah. I'll bring you. I'll take you to the doctors. I'll bring you food. I'll see to it that you're properly taken care of. I'll put on your clothing for you. I'll put on your shoes. but over here. How is it that I'm not honoring you by marrying? This is somebody that I've chosen to marry, and I want to marry this person. So the Marik says, he's not avoiding honoring his father. He's doing all the necessary actions to honor his father. And over here he says, over here is the father saying, I don't want you to do something. If you honor me, you will not do that. So regarding this, the Marik says, the son does not have to listen. So this is the famous ruling of the Marik. Based upon what we've just learned, I think it's obvious, since we see that the Marik holds and the Ramah passes in Shulchan Aruch that you do not have to listen lechatchila. You do not have to marry somebody against your own will, against your will. If you fall, you do not have to marry someone against your will, or you do not have to separate or detach yourself from a woman that you want to marry because your parents are opposed to it. So then, in response to the question that we began tonight with, what if you're married already to someone, right? You're already married to someone, and your father says, I don't like her. Your mother says, I don't want her. I want you to divorce. So certainly, it's a classic kal vachomer. It's obvious that if I don't have to listen to my father when he tells me not to go out with a girl, and I'm allowed to marry somebody against his will, Why? Because of the reasons that we've just learned. Then how much more so, infinitely more so, that if you want to remain married to this person, so you, and your father says divorce, so your mother says get away from her, so first of all, that causes you loss of money, it causes you tsara de gufa, personal pain and aggravation, right? It causes you personal anguish. You do not have to suffer personal loss or personal anguish and aggravation because of, in order to honor your father. Even according to the law that says that the son has to pay for the medical expenses or whatever, you do not have to suffer physical, personal anguish and loss, which you're going to have financially, A. B, you're not going to have, you're not going to be married anymore. So you're going to have the anguish of taking care of your own personal physical needs. And also in terms of family needs and so on. All of these things and suffering the separation from children. There is no, you certainly are not required to go through that because of honoring the parent. So it's certainly you would not have to divorce a parent because of anything like that. Divorce a wife because of a parent wishing that. Aleph Beis. Based upon the Marik says that even when choosing a wife, the Torah wants you not to make sure that you first meet that person and know the person so that you should be able to have some feelings and you should be able to eventually love the person. How much more so when you're already married and you love your wife, and you want to remain married, and how much more so that if the father or the mother come to interfere, even in the case when they say, even when it comes stomp to another Jew, and the father says, I don't want you to forgive that person, I want you to hate that person. So how much more so, and then you don't listen, how much more so if a father says, I want you to separate from that woman, to hate your wife, which in effect means, I want you to hate your wife and to throw her out of your house, to separate, to divorce. How much more so, since with a wife, every single moment that you are with your wife, and every single moment that you treat her properly, you're mekayim, you're fulfilling a positive commandment of what? Of yahavta rech kamocha, to love another Jew. To love another Jew, and for a parent to expect that to be violated is against halacha. So that seems to be clear cut, that a parent cannot demand a divorce in any way, and if a parent does, then that is to be completely ignored. That's aleph. Now, what's a little bit more delicate situation is that what is the halacha when you have parents who are coming, dropping in? Who are dropping it all the time, and they have the ability to make a constant riv, to make fights. They know how to stare. In other words, they're not saying to divorce. No, you should live together till 120 with the children, grandchildren, beautiful. But whenever they come around, or very often when they come around, they generate such a machloikis, such fights, that whenever they leave, there are fights between the husband and wife. Akidekach, that the woman has come to a point, we're just using this as an example, obviously give you the other situation, but the woman comes to a point where she says, I simply cannot bear it anymore, and she asks her husband, I'm asking you to break off ties with your parents. I cannot bear it anymore. I do not want them in my house. I do not want to have anything to do with them. Right? Now, because of what she's been through, because she says that they're causing us to lose our shalom bayis, we're losing the peace in our own house, and the husband admits that his parents are difficult people. Right? He admits that you know, he can't disagree. There are problems every time they come. They get involved and there are difficulties, and he's not disagreeing. The question is he allowed to stop performing the mitzvah from the Torah, which is one of the most, the most important mitzvahs of honoring parents? Is he allowed at this point in his life to suspend his obligation to honor his parents because the wife says, I won't let them to my house. I will not allow you to have anything to do with them. I can't bear them having, and when you talk to them, when you have anything to do with them, they're making our lives miserable. They're destroying our shalom bayis. So the question is, what's the halacha? So, in Siman Ayin Dalet of Evan Ezra, which I didn't see this originally, but I just found it the other day. In Siman Ayin Dalet, that's why it wasn't listed in one of the sources, but there's a very interesting opinion that's stated here. It's the Mechaber. Maran, the Shulchan Aruch writes the following. V'chein, hi sha'amra, ein ritzoni sh'yavo lebeis avicha, v'imecha. Achicha v'achisecha. Not only can she stand the parents, she also can't stand her brother-in-law and her sister-in-law, right? It's the whole chevra. You know, the families used to all live in one courtyard, right? So she says, I refuse to go see them. I will not go to them. and I will not live with them in one courtyard. They're bad to me. They cause me harm. Umitzayrimli, they cause me aggravation. So the Shulchan Aruch says, Shominla. We listen to her. Now the Rama adds on, Hagav. V'davke shenir v'beiz din sheyesh mamish b'dvareha. This is not some sort of a reckless halacha. It's davke, if the beiz din, the Jewish court, has to evaluate the situation and has to concur that there is something to what she's saying. This is a bad situation. The in-laws are difficult people and are causing Shalom Bayis problems. It has to be evaluated. It's not davke have to be a beis din. It could be, it doesn't davke have to be a beis din. But Ramos says, And that the in-laws are causing fights between the husband and wife. They have to be evaluated by a bezdin outside. But if not, we don't listen to her. She could stop me making problems. She could be a mishigan herself or making problems. And he brings an interesting thing. Listen to how the Ramah ends. He says, this was happening, you know, it happened then, it happens now. So he says, the minig is, we put a Jew who we trust, a chash of a Jew, somebody that we trust, to stay there in the house for a while, to live with them. But tidur imayim, achi is barai, they mean this gagal hariv aktata. Till we get to the bottom of who's the cause. Is she causing the fights or the in-laws? Or are the in-laws causing the fights? So, right?
If the husband's agreeing, then...
The husband's agreeing that the parents are difficult people, but the husband says, I can't break off my parents. I don't want to break off my parents, and we have to go visit them. It's what do you think? She says that I can't take it. So the Shulchan Aruch comes out very strongly. Shaymanla, we listen to her. The Ramah is quieting down this halach a little bit. The Ramah says, hold it, let's see. Let's have a bezdin evaluate the situation, and then right afterwards says, doesn't davke have to be a bezdin? You could put a chashuv yid to go and to see and to live there, and to the bezdin that the court trusts, and to evaluate the situation to see who is it that's causing the fight. So we would say that the Shulchan Aruch, the understanding of the Shulchan Aruch is this svar is the same svar that we learned based upon this Ma'arik and what we just spoke about. That if parents cannot command you to divorce, they can't force you to divorce each other, right? For husband and wife to get a divorce, then for parents who the Bezdin has determined are meddling and interfering and making their lives miserable, it's the equivalent of forcing the children to get divorced. It's just instead of saying get a divorce, they'll do it over 20 years, you know, or 25 years. They'll just dig in until the husband and wife have so many fights that they can't stand each other. And I remember reading years ago that the number one cause for divorce in America are in-laws that are meddling. Parents who are getting involved. The second main reason is religion. Religious differences, interestingly enough. But meddling in-laws, parents getting themselves into the lives of the children, it's the equivalent of telling them to get a divorce. And that's the svar. I mean, the concept of what the Ma'arik is based upon is that there's an obligation to be devoted, a husband and wife to be devoted to each other and to love each other, to fulfill the mitzvah of loving another Jew. And it's a responsibility, it's an obligation. I don't have to go through personal suffering and anguish of divorce because of my parents' whims. It would seem that the same svara, the same logic applies here. That if the parents are interfering in such a way that they're changing a house into a Gehenna, into a hell. That in-laws, parents who are interfering can change a happy home into a hell. Mamash into a Gehenna. To the point that the husband and wife simply can't live with each other and they would want to get a divorce. So it seems to be no less than it would seem to, we could apply the same reasoning we've applied until now. The same way that a parent can't say to you, don't marry this person, and a parent cannot say to you, divorce this person, they also can't make you so miserable in your marriage that your shalom bias is being completely destroyed. I saw it was brought down by the Shilta Gibarim, in the name of the Shilta Gibarim. It was a very important commentary that's found on the Rif. I couldn't find this Shilta Gibarim. I only saw it brought down in other svarim, but I wasn't able to find it. But it's brought in his name that if someone sees that his parents, that his father or his mother, are bale deis ros, that they are very opinionated people that are tormenting him. This is aside from the issue of marriage. This is not an issue of marriage. that they're opinionated people who are tormenting the children with force, you know, with making them crazy with their ideas and their and so on. So it's brought down from the Shulta Giborim. I didn't see the inside, but he says that Yishamen Lefnei V'yetzei, that he could leave them. He can go away. He could leave home. He can say, forget it, I've had it. He doesn't have to stay. He doesn't have to be subjected to that kind of torture of parents who are bombarding him with all kinds of bizarre opinions and are making his life miserable. I don't know if since I didn't see the Shulta Giborim, I can't say what did he mean on a permanent basis to go away from the parents, to cut yourself off from the parents, or did he mean for the time being to get out of the house? So I can't. It's not clear. But the idea of the Shulta Giborim supports this certainly. How much more so if your parents are making the lives of the children unbearable in the home, and they can't live with each other because of the parents, then certainly it's much worse than a father or mother who just says crazy stuff or has opinions that are unbearable.
Does the also like when you leave the in-laws?
And that's a whole different subject. The question of, can a parent say to the kid, I don't want you to have anything to do with my parents, or with your grandparents? Right? That's a good question. And that's related to the nature of the obligation for a grandchild to honor a grandparent, in which case a father cannot tell a grandson, who gets along perfectly well with a grandparent, to violate a mitzvah from the Torah, or if not from the Torah, then Rimi Darabanan, to honor a grandparent. So that would be much more complicated. The conclusion here is that it's a little bit hard to come to any one conclusion, because obviously every situation is different. Obviously, where there are parents who are interfering and in-laws who are interfering and making their lives difficult, every effort has to be this. Well, these halachas that we're talking about are only after every effort has been taken, which means whatever it might take, discussions and begging and talking and having a rav and having friends. Try to do whatever you can, and after, you know, maybe family therapy, whatever you could try, and it's gaitnish. It's not. They're not talking about that. The first thing is that the parents say something I don't like. We're going. I mean, that's obviously absurd. It means that every effort is being taken to try to preserve the family situation, and it's not succeeding. Then it really boils down: can a wife say, "I don't want them in my house. I will have nothing to do with them." It seems she is entitled to say that. But what if she says, I don't want you ever talking to them? Like, in other words, he says, okay. That's what it says, Shulchan Aruch, they're not coming to the house. The dinners, I have to listen to you. And they're not coming to the house. But they're my parents, so I'm going to go to their house. You know, I have to go see them, whatever. I'm going to visit them and talk to them.
Well, that's the same issue, though.
Yeah.
I mean, the point is, if parents getting enough into that person's head to make a tumult in the shalom case, if the parent has any association with them, they're still going to have the same.
Right. So if the parents are poisonous people, and she says that they're and again, it's been determined by Beis Din or by somebody else who's there and watches and sees that the parents are just poisonous people who are turning the son against the daughter. So then it would seem that according to halacha, she has the right to make such a demand that he has nothing to do with them at all, period. And that I didn't see this clearly spelled out, but it sounds like I'll be smart. Makes sense that he would have to listen. Then the question is, if they're not such poisonous people, it's just that she finds them, she can't bear the situation. So then I would say that he has a positive commandment from the Torah to honor his parents. And he has to go to see them, and so on. Right. So therefore, he doesn't have to have his wife's rishus, but it needs to be carefully scrutinized and studied by someone who's respected to see what is the influence of the parents over this family. So if it's just that she can't stand having them around. Ideally, he will still go to them and spend time. And then the question, of course, will come up, what happens when they're old and they need to be taken care of. So that case, in that situation, more often than not, their poison has already been neutralized. They might not even know what's going on. They're just helpless, and they need the children. So then it would seem that the original obligation would fall back into place. Now they're not poisoning the relationship anymore. They're just old people that need care. And so then for you to say, I have bad feelings, or I resent what happened in the past, that's a problem, you know. You would have to try to overcome that and to go back and help them, despite the bad feelings. That's an obligation from the Torah. And finally, I don't think this even has to be discussed, because we don't have to study this inside any cipher, that parents, in-laws, meaning parents, have no say over decisions such as where you're going to send your children to yeshiva, how your children are supposed to dress, whether your children are going to go to this movie, watch this show, whether or not, whether or not, what kind of a profession they should choose. In other words, if you have in-laws that are interfering in decisions that are being made vis-a-vis the children, with their children, what they should be doing, there's, of course, there's absolutely no responsibility at all to pay any attention to what the parents have to say. That doesn't mean you have to say, you know what you're talking about, be quiet. You know, you're not allowed to be disrespectful, but so you could politely, ignore it. But the parents certainly cannot tell you, the grandparents, the in-laws cannot dictate as to how you're going to raise your children. That's your responsibility, and has nothing to do with the in-laws, what the parents have to say. And that's something which often causes difficulties in marriages as well, when the grandparents start giving their philosophy over to the grandchildren, and don't respect the wishes and the lifestyle of their own children. Every effort must be taken to reach some sort of a peaceful resolution, and if one cannot reach a peaceful resolution, then the marriage comes first, and the relationship to the children comes before the responsibility to the parents. But with God's help, there shouldn't be any conflicts, and we should be able to keep all these things, to honor our parents, to honor our husbands, to honor our wives, and to honor our Kodesh Baruch.